Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks. We'll begin today with protests across the nation, including here in Boston. They've been going on for weeks now, ever since a grand jury decision in Ferguson, Missouri, not to indict a white police officer for the killing of Michael Brown, an unarmed black man. They were sparked again in the wake of another decision not to indict, this one in New York, where an unarmed black man died after a white police officer put him in a chokehold. And the protests continued this past weekend, including here in Boston, where some 1,000 people rallied on the steps of the State House on Saturday.
No justice, no peace, no racist police.
Hands up,
don't shoot. Hands
State up, police arrested 23 people over the weekend. There were also protests in Harvard Square and outside of a Brookline police department where demonstrators staged a die-in. So several weeks of protests, where will they lead? Massachusetts Governor Deval Patrick addressed that question yesterday when he appeared on CNN's State of the Union.
I hope they lead to a broader and deeper kind of understanding, not just the much vaunted conversation on race, but some real examination of the differences in the way people experience interactions with the police, the concerns that police have, the kind of fear that is out there in so many camps from so many different perspectives. I'm hopeful.
So, are these protests the start of a significant movement that could lead to real change or deeper understanding, as Governor Patrick suggested, or will they just die out as the Occupy movement did 3 years ago? For some broader context on all of this, we're joined by Charles Derber. He's a professor of sociology at Boston College. He studied the history of protests like these, and he's thought a lot about where they can lead. And Professor Derber, welcome back to Radio Boston. It's good to have you.
Thanks very much, Anthony.
So, what do you think? We just heard Governor Patrick there expressing hope that these protests could lead to some deeper understanding about issues around race and justice. What do you see? Is this the start of something significant?
Well, I hope so. I don't think we know. And I think the context of this is, I think the Occupy, I'm glad you mentioned it, sort of identified the fact that we're living in a society which is being polarized in a very dramatic way between the very wealthy and most of the rest of the population. And I've written about this as an economic order, a globalizing corporate order, which is basically constructing a population of surplus people, people who don't really have a home, a place in the society. And a large percentage of these people are black or in other minorities. And a large percentage of them are white. Now, what happens in a society of surplus, large numbers of surplus people? It's going to be an angry and divided society vulnerable to large-scale protest. And so the people managing the system have to keep parts of the surplus population from joining with each other to mount a larger challenge to this broader system. What would happen if black surplus people unified with white surplus people, mass millions of white working class people, for example? It would be very dangerous for the existing order. So I think the key thing to recognize, and it's happened historically many times, is that when economies are in decline and are not providing the needs, particularly in jobs, viable jobs for people, people managing the system rely on racial divisions long existing in the society to keep parts of the surplus population apart from each other. And we have today a prison industrial police complex, you might call it, which essentially targets the black surplus people but absorbs many of the white surplus people as in jobs. One of the most profitable industries in the United States is the prison industry, which is privately owned. It makes a lot of money. And it absorbs a lot of the white surplus population and plays on longstanding racial identities.
Well, let me ask you, though, about this, because it seems like you're really focusing on sort of economic disparities that create what you call surplus people. We saw sort of concern around that, I think, being expressed in the Occupy movement in 2011. People might disagree with this, but it seems like that sort of petered out. And I'm wondering if there are, if you see these protests that we're seeing in the wake of these police killings as somehow different. And if so, how are they different?
Well, I think they're related because they're both responding to crisis in this larger system that I've been describing. But there's a big difference, Anthony. How many black people were involved in the Occupy protests? It was largely a protest of white, middle-class people. That's simplifying. I think the protests today are different because the whole system I'm describing about is propped up by racism, and the targets who are suffering most in this system are blacks, and they're feeling it viscerally in their communities by at the spear of violence by the police. So these are, in my view, these are movements that are responding to the same deep crisis in our economic and political system. But the system, I think this happened in the 1960s as well, when the racial divide and people who are at the bottom of the whole racist system are able to mobilize nationally on a large and are active on TV, as happened with Martin Luther King, as happened in the...
And do you think we're seeing the beginning of something
so
like that?
So that's what we don't know. Yeah. I think that the scope of the activity nationally, the diversity of it in big and large places around the country, the fact that a lot of millennial whites have joined in solidarity, and most of all that the black communities around the country of all forms have come together in support of this movement is hopeful. It gives a one gives a feeling that this might be the awakening of a new round of protests that we and social movements that we haven't really seen since the civil rights movements and the anti-Vietnam War movement in the 1960s. But if anybody tells you to know that they know this for sure, they are blowing smoke, because we can't know this.
Of course,
sure.
We can't know. Time will tell. But it is interesting that we've seen over the past few months a series of different protests over different issues: the climate march in New York City, the minimum wage movements among Walmart and fast food workers. Now these more recent ones over racial justice and police misconduct or alleged misconduct. Are they all connected in some way? It seems like they
absolutely.
Are.
I'm so glad you're raising this, because it's really the point of my analysis. There is a system, a political economic system in our country that is giving rise to climate change, giving rise to racism, giving rise to economic polarization. All of these movements you just mentioned are expressions, manifestations of the crisis of this system, which is a system in decline, which is where the cracks are beginning to be exposed more dramatically. So you just mentioned four or five things: the low wage movement, the anti-police thing, starting with Trayvon Martin, the climate movement, which ended up protesting Wall Street and was, you know, sat in front of various of the big banks, J.P. Morgan and so forth. So I think that that's another hopeful sign that these movements are seeing are happening at the same time and are beginning to connect the dots of a problem in a system that's affecting all of them. I think the racial thing is particularly important, and maybe a particular case, because remember, the whole system rests and is propped up on the racial component. And if we can break down and highlight and attack that racism, then all these other connections may come together.
Interesting. Well, that's a really interesting broader context, sort of from 20 or 30,000 feet, if you will. Let's bring in Danaisha Yancey into this conversation. She's an organizer with Black Lives Matter Boston, a group that has organized some of the recent protests in the streets of Boston. And Danaisha, welcome to Radio Boston. It's good to have you.
Thanks for having us.
I'd love you to just sort of sum up the main issues that are inspiring people to come out on the streets to protest. How do you view this at the street level?
People are protesting state-sanctioned violence against black people in this country. And so that's why people are flooding the streets. That's how this movement has begun and why it continues.
Yeah. And so who's out there on the streets? Who are the primary organizers of these events? Students, church leaders, community members, all of the above?
I would say all of the above. There have been several protests that Black Lives Matter Boston has organized, and also we've seen several organized marches from other groups.
Yeah. And you've been listening to what Professor Charles Derber has been saying. Do you see this? I mean, again, only time will tell, as he says there's no way to know this, but I'd love to know your view on this. Do you see this as the beginning of a sustained movement that could lead to real change? What's your feeling about that?
Absolutely. I agree. And something that he said is that the entire system is built on racism and white supremacy. This country was built on slavery and is predicated on on racism. And so that is the beast that we are attacking, right?
Well, let's listen again to a clip from Governor Deval Patrick speaking yesterday on CNN about the protests over the weekend in Boston. He said they were largely about disruption. Here's what he said.
I think it does beg some questions. What is it we're trying to accomplish beyond disruption? Certainly, part of it is to make sure people understand just how broadly the concern lies around being understood and not being fearful either as unarmed black men or as police. And that huge chasm of misunderstanding between the two has got to be bridged.
So, Dinesha, let me just come to you about that question of disruption as a primary goal. I mean, are the protests about disruption or towards some deeper understanding about the injustice? What's your view on that?
I think they're about raising awareness, interrupting the status quo, and really encouraging people to find their moral center around this issue of state-sanctioned violence against black people. I don't think that those things are mutually exclusive, and I think that it's encouraging folks to find out what is right? Where do they stand? There is no neutral on a moving train, and the state is continuously perpetuating violence against black people and black communities.
Mm. And Charles Durber, I'd love you to respond to what we heard the governor saying there, talking about it begs some questions. What is it that we're trying to accomplish beyond disruption here?
Yeah, well, I think Deval Patrick is narrowing the focus again, which has always been a death knell for movements, it seems to me. The problem is not just police-community relations. It's not just it's like saying in Iraq, if you have an occupation, all you have to do is manage the occupation a little bit more smart, be a little more smart, and you do it. No kind of occupation will do so. Well, black communities are occupied right now because they've been essentially disenfranchised, and you have a whole system of prisons and police that are essentially a form of occupation. They also represent the sort of post supporting the larger global corporate system that is producing enormous waves of shock to much of the white population. And it's this racial divide, and this is not new, of course, but because the system is in a more precarious mode, the racial divide plays a more important role in propping up a system that is very shaky. Mm. So I think this is a disruption. Most of all, the system seeks passivity. It wants citizens who are increasingly surplus to be quiet, to see the system as just and to see the system as legitimate. And so the police are the edge of that system, but there's a much deeper force behind it. And I see this movement as important because the most vulnerable are finding the courage to get out and speak up, which is the most important leverage in America that oppressed people have, which is to get out on the streets and speak out.
Dinesha, I have one more question that I'll put to you. Boston has had a long history of racial tension, culminating with the busing crisis decades ago. But in recent years, I think a lot of people like to think the racial climate is much improved. Boston police are generally well-regarded in the neighborhoods they patrol. Do these protests suggest that we need to rethink some of those assumptions?
Yeah, I would disagree strongly that is not the experience of many people in Boston. Mm-hmm. And I think that this movement is about transforming the systems that we live under.
All right. Well, that's Dinesha Yancey. She's an organizer at Black Lives Matter Boston. Dinesha, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
And Charles Durber, professor of sociology at Boston College, thank you for coming in and helping us to think about this in a broader context. Very grateful.
Thanks very much, Ethan.
Listeners, stay with us. Coming up, should Boston host the 2024 Summer Olympic Games? We'll have a debate about that question with your calls. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.